Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, May 17th, 2022, and this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. And tonight we're saying, what is our role as participants? And originally we're going to discuss our role in unions, as union members, and how do we stop this government from stealing from us now. And our answer was going to be a unity of anti-imperialist progressives. But in light of all that is taking place, the elections, the Holocaust, we just want to say, what is our role as participants, period? And how do we stop this government from stealing from us, from murdering us, from incarcerating us? And the answer is still the same. Unity of anti-imperialist progressives. And tonight you're going to hear an interesting follow-up on the tragedy in Buffalo. We may have some live footage for you, a recording from a rally and a protest that's going on in the sister community of Rochester tonight, because it has been discovered that originally this member of the right-wing army had planned to go to Rochester instead of Buffalo. And you will be hearing some of the people from the community, if our technology permits, at a rally speaking on this issue. But without further ado, Brother Ralph Pointer, what's happening?
Oh, good evening, my brothers and sisters. As you can hear, things are happening so fast that we feel and are overwhelmed, and we are going to try to catch up. Of course, the problems of yesterday are still the problems of today because we have not solved them. But we try to raise awareness as to what our basic problems are and how do we deal with them. This is a program to support and make awareness of our political prisoners. This is still a job that we have not been able to bring our community to understand the importance of this, not only for their sake, but for our own sake and the issues at Buffalo and every center city of this country. Says it over and over again, but the people still are not able to hear it. But before we get into that, we must talk about a soldier in our Army of Progressives who has passed this evening. And so before we get to our other issues, before we connect all of the dots, we have to say goodbye to Toby Emmer, our longtime friend and supporter of activist causes, has passed. She is missed already, and if you look at any of the pictures of her, you see her with a smile that's on her face. She took on very difficult positions, supporting people who we call our brothers and sisters when at a time when it was most difficult. She supported Sister Lynn when the Islamophobia was at a high point. And it's heartwarming to see that there are those not only out in the world, but among us, who try to bring us all of our positions together. And Toby Emmer was someone who was constantly at work on this issue. I remember getting messages from Sylvia Baldini, who we all know who Sylvia is, and she's in Italy, and it was difficult to communicate with her. And Toby was able to do that and give us messages just like the old Pony Express. It was instant. When Toby would come back, we would have conversations, and she would get ready for her next trip to Italy. Very difficult times, but Toby always dealt with these times with a smile on her face. And long live the attitude of Toby Emmer. And there will never be another Toby Emmer, but they must have someone among us who keeps us together, reminds us constantly that it's not about one thing, it's about everything. And if we're to win this, we have to have understanding and work together to do this. You couldn't be angry at an opposing idea as to how we were to get our freedom if Toby Emmer said it to us. This was her magic. She was able to deal with this, and as Ralph Shulman said, many times the problem with our movement is that when we join the movement, we bring ourselves to the movement with all of our ills, evils, warts, etc. But someone has to keep this focus on making positive change. Toby Emmer was that person for me. We all need that person. She will sorely be missed. And I say, Toby Emmer presente. And there will be other people calling in to talk about Toby Emmer as well as the overwhelming, the issues that just keep cropping up constantly, and we don't know where to start. And so we're thinking of putting our program, Tuesday is an opening for our program Wednesday, because the issues are the same, but on our Wednesday Pacifica program, WBAI 99.5 on the radio, we focus on one or two issues. But this evening, we have several changes we have to deal with because our wonderful poet, Professor Louis, is on sabbatical. As he said to me, he has to take time to go to the country and get his creative juices flowing again without stress. And every year this happens. And we wish him well. We must support his efforts to get his creative juices flowing. And we have in his place, not the same Professor Louis type of poetry, we have those who love poetry and who have statements, issues that they would like to bring to us in prose or poetry. Form, Jan Lahman will start with us, and Henry Higgins. So tonight we open with Jan Lahman's thoughts and possibly poetry, prose or poetry, to get our intellectual juices flowing. Jan, your microphone is open.
Good evening, Brother Ralph, Sister Betty, and everyone that's here this evening. Yes, it's definitely with a sadness in my heart, and I'll be honest, I had some tears in my eyes when I heard about Toby's passing on Sunday. She was a dear friend to me for many long years, and I'll just take a few minutes to kind of add on to what Brother Ralph was already saying. Toby was, you know, she was a kind of a small woman, and she almost always had a smile on her face, even when she was dealing with, like, serious and harsh issues. Her voice could be strong, powerful, insightful, cutting if need be, about the issues of the freedom struggle and the injustices that this government and imperialism beyond does. But I'll give you just one example. Toby, just this past March on International Women's Day, she came out here to, I'm in Ohio at the moment, and she came out to Ohio, and it was at a neighborhood community center, a largely black neighborhood. Wasn't a political organization or an activist community as such. And she was there, and she made, like, a very, very sharp and detailed and clear explanation about International Women's Day, the roots, the struggle, and so forth. And the people in that room, just regular community folks, you know, from her first minute or so of speaking, I mean, they were just into listening to every word she was saying and, you know, later asking many questions. And, I mean, she just had that ability to, like, touch people and at the same time bring forth issues and information and ideas that maybe, you know, people even weren't aware of, or that were might be considered, you know, subversive ideas or you know, revolutionary ideas, which they certainly were. But she would bring them across, and people would hear and listen and thank her for bringing it forward. And that's exactly what she did here. And so when we heard about her passing on Sunday, I conveyed the thought to some of the folks that, you know, she was here with a couple of months ago, and everybody was just so genuinely sad and just kind of shocked to hear that this happened to this, you know, this dynamic, wonderful woman. So I just wanted to bring up that little thought and remembrance. And I will offer up a poem, not my own, just a poem by Marilyn Buck. And Marilyn Buck, of course, was a beautiful revolutionary woman, sister, fighter, anti-imperialist to the bone. And, you know, she was a political prisoner for years and years and years. And she passed in 2010. They let her out just literally 2 weeks before she passed out of years of captivity. But she did die with friends and in the embrace of her comrades. And so this is a poem by her. And it's kind of autobiographical. And in some ways, when I read this poem, I also think of Toby and, you know, her whole life of standing up and struggling and never, never backing down. And the name of this poem is called Biography. Post-war 1947. Born on the white side of the track, Texas segregation, civil rights preacher's child. Fled Texas with honors diploma for UC Berkeley and free speech. Though I did not know that, that's why I left. Vietnam War, 1965. What war are you fighting for? Make love, not war. College books tossed into a trunk in some room I've never seen since. Fires of internationalism called me a girl to enlist in the anti-war. War against America, my own woman's liberation on the line. War in America, war against the war makers, white-skinned haters, capitalist consumers of human lives. Following the tradition, Nat Turner, John Brown, Wobblies, subversives, resistance in the belly of the beast. Clandestine war, 1973, captured by the killers, spirit killers, nation killers, a political prisoner, enemy of the state, terrorist and traitor, white woman dangerous to white America, condemned to years and years of absence, a lifetime. War makers wait for its prisoners to die or go crazy or simply wither away into insignificance. I rest, a grain of sand, significant on the beachhead that meets the sea. To face the storm, I wage resistance to stay alive. I learn to search out freedom in the breath. My cells send out dendrites to absorb the world and its offerings. I offer back poems and occasional grains of sand mixed in the clay and fired into sturdiness. And Marilyn wrote this poem in the autumn of 1999.
Well, thank you so much for that. When I think of these people, we're supposed to think of joy, but it's hard for me to bring joy out of this. Toby Emmer, presente. Thank you so much for that, Jan. Sister Betty.
As you know, this program is dedicated to political prisoners. But before we go on, I want to make a special announcement that there will be a resistance action by the Rising Together Coalition. And it's on the 22nd of this weekend, and as many people as possible to try and support this Sunday from 11 to 8, 5 days. So we're hoping that you will join this effort. Again, 5C Cafe and Cultural Center, 68th Avenue C and East 5th Street in the Lower East Side, folks. Once again, it's from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. There will be a discussion. There will be poetry. There will be music. There will be a procession and performers throughout this time. Without further ado, we want to resume our program for right now. We are dedicated to political prisoners, and I know Sister Ann Lamb, although she also feels the loss, might have a report for us on our political prisoners. Sister Ann, your mic is open.
Oh, thank you so much, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph. Always an honor and a privilege. Thank my brother there for that great poem by Marilyn. Certainly true. Of course, I miss and love Toby. I always said to Toby every time I saw her, Toby, Emma lived like her, dare to struggle, dare to win. Because she certainly did that in her life and was a really amazing human being. Don't really have any particular updates. We're still waiting for confirmation on Sundiata, you know, being home. So as soon as we get any updates, we will let you know on that. And we do have a little update on Jessica Resnicek. Jessica, as you may know, is one of our water protectors. They decided they were going to hit her with some terrorism enhancements, and I quote and I unquote. And she's appealing that. Just had a court date recently, and a lot of people were tuning in to listen. You know, they were having oral arguments. So they just argued this on Friday the 13th, that her actions do not constitute terrorism. And this is argued by, this appeal is supported by quite a few people, the Center for Constitutional Rights, the National Lawyers Guild, the Water Protectors Legal Collective, and the Climate Defense Project. If Jessica Resnicek's actions can be punished as terrorism, says an amicus brief filed by CCR, the United States will have moved so far past the international consensus as to be operating in a completely different realm, which is really amazing. So on Friday, she had more than 100 supporters who dialed in to listen for the oral arguments. The three appellate judges are Jonathan A. Cove, David R. Strass, and Ralph R. Erickson. Three guys, I noticed. And they are arguing that the terrorism enhancement imposed at her sentencing by request of the Department of Justice by District Judge Rebecca Goodgame Ebinger was misapplied. And so we're going to wait and see in the coming weeks what the result of all this is, because if she doesn't have the terrorism enhancement, she could get out much sooner. In 2017, Jessica and a partner from Catholic Workers Movement publicly claimed responsibility for acts of vandalism against the Dakota Access Pipeline. In February 2021, Jessica pled guilty to a single count of conspiracy to damage an energy facility. In June 2021, an Iowa judge imposed a quote-unquote terrorism enhancement at the prosecution's request and sentenced Jessica to 8 years in prison. And in addition to that, to pay restitution of more than $3 million to Energy Transfer LLC, the company that owns the Dakota Access Pipeline. Now, you got to consider, no one was injured. Nobody got hurt. This was an act of civil disobedience. And, you know, we're seeing this happen around many things. Excessive punishment for water protectors is on the rise, where more states are passing harsh laws that target protesters, which have been architected and funded by the fossil fuel industry. Jessica wrote in a 2021 statement to the court, "I am not a political person. I am certainly not a terrorist. I'm simply a person who cares deeply about an extremely basic human right that is under threat, water." So, you know, here's somebody who, you know, went and, you know, damaged a pipeline, and she's facing a terrorism enhancement. I don't know what's going to happen to that young terrorist up in Buffalo. Hopefully he will also face a terrorism enhancement. You know, we always have these great disparities, so we have to pay attention.
Well, thank you so much for that, Ann. And with that said, we must move on because we have so many people who would like to speak. Sister Betty.
Yes. We have a comrade, Henry Hagens, in the house.
Yes.
Henry, thanks for joining us this evening. Your mic is open.
Thank you, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph and all our guests and contributors. I remember Toby Emmer as a woman full of energy, devotion, and her smile. She was a staunch supporter of Amir and any political action of merit that advanced the people's struggle. And I'd like to share with you a poem entitled "The Poet Speaks" by Georgia Douglas Johnson. Toby was a giver for the movement. How much living have you done? From it, the patterns that you weave are imaged. Your own life is your totem pole, your yard of cloth, your living. How much loving have you done? How full and free your giving? For living is but loving, and loving only giving. And that's
all right. Thank you so much for that, Henry Higgins. Much to think about on an evening such as this. Sister Betty.
We have a number of people who are new to us or whose numbers we don't recognize, so from time to time we're going to intersperse them with our regulars. The last four digits are 9829. 9829. Did you wish to speak?
Hi. Am I on?
Yes, you're on. Your microphone
Hi,
is open.
So this is Meg Starr from Resistance in Brooklyn. And I wanted to say a few words about Toby as well. And
please.
Unfortunately, I was rushing home to do this, and I may have missed the first few minutes, but if you want, I'll do like a sort of, I'll try to touch on some, the thing about Toby, you know how you take a rock and you throw it in the water and you see all these circles coming out from the rock? Toby was, you know, the rock, like if you, she was the rock, and then there's all these circles around her of movement struggle. And she was born into the movement. Her parents were devoted, radical members of the Communist Party at a time when it was very radical and active. And she and her brother were both leaders in the anti-war movement. She ran for sheriff in Madison, Wisconsin in 72 when she was a young woman. And I wish maybe someone will have the details of that campaign. I only know the famous poster with this wonderful young Toby with a gun under her arm, suggesting the power of radical women and running. She didn't win, but there was a powerful movement force behind her, I think. I know she participated as a radical gender nonconformist. She and her longtime woman partner participated in the Committee for Out and Outraged Lesbians, which was a very anti-racist force in the women's community in New York. She was in a women's group in Madison with Sylvia Beraldini, and when Sylvia Beraldini faced life imprisonment in this country, Toby, who hadn't been in touch with her for a long time, rallied with a group of women and other activists to free Sylvia and get her to Italy, where she lives to this day. Her work around Lumia, I just remember once hearing Toby on the radio talking about how she had to go to New Jersey to speak before a group, and she was receiving death threats, and yet she was planning to go. And she ended up with, I think a group of people went with her to help protect her at that time, but there was no question in Toby's mind that she was going to go. So her sense of solidarity to people in the movement under repression, to the Black and Puerto Rican movements in particular, the you can't count the number of times she offered to drive someone who really couldn't have gotten somewhere in her car. She just, any time of the day or night, she was available to transport someone and get things going. She went to the meetings to free Oscar Lopez Rivera, and she just contributed this great sense of humor and this ability to be practical and get down to whatever the work was at that time, she was going to do it. She ran a very special GED program, and I know she was beloved of the teachers and the students, and they're one of the many communities that are so touched by her passing. Then, of course, there's her daughter and her grandchildren and her incredible family, her cousins and her brother. And there's so many communities right now mourning her passing. She met briefly a group of young people that were getting political education in Puerto Rico on a trip, and they've been reaching out to me and saying, is it real? Could it possibly be true that she's died? So everybody who is in some way touched, everybody who is one of the circles that of the ripples that Toby created with her presence, everybody who felt part of her beloved community is mourning her right now. The information about memorial services and things like that has not yet come out, but we'll get back to you with it as soon as it does come out.
Well, thank you so much, Meg Myers, of Brooklyn, and we are beginning to hear the extent of Toby Emmer's activity and the extent of the number and broad range of people that she touched. And all I can say is she will be missed, and Toby Emmer, presente.
We want to thank you for getting on, because we know you are extremely busy, and we know you have a special guest, and you missed Jan Lahman's tribute and Henry Hagen's poem tribute. Both of them did speak on her, and it is interesting how Jan mirrors your statement about her ability to enroll people in resistance and liberation. Do you want to say a little bit about the organization of resistance in Brooklyn, or speak on the update on the Mandela Human Rights Initiative at this time, or do you have to go? We know you're very busy.
Well, Betty, I can say a few words. First of all, I will say that my name is Meg Starr. Even though my longtime partner in life is Matt Meyer, so I'm just going to make that tiny correction there. And I did get to hear Henry and Jan. I was fortunate enough to hear their tributes. So I've been listening for a while. Resistance in Brooklyn is a white anti-imperialist affinity group and collective, and we were lucky, fortunate enough to participate, many of us, in working with the amazing Spirit of Mandela coalition, and it's an exciting moment because the final verdict of the judges has been completed. And after all the testimony they heard, these are internationally renowned lawyers and people who have a special relationship to human rights law from around the world. And currently the head of the judges is at our house, and they've been working out the final touches on the document, but the verdict is that the U.S. was found guilty of genocide against the black, brown, and indigenous communities of this country, with much testimony, much of it, of course, from the political prisoners, but from all the aspects of genocide, from the environmental genocide to the police brutality, all of it in sum. So I hope you'll get to have them on to discuss the uses of having a verdict and a place in international law where we can take what we're seeing in this country and carry it to higher courts. So
thank you so much for that, Meg Starr of Resistance in Brooklyn.
Ralph, who's known me for so many years.
Many. A long time activist.
Yes.
And supporter of justice. We will be working together because the struggle continues. Thank you once again, Sister Betty.
Thank you, Betty and
Brother Ralph.
Okay, we've got a long list of people who have called in this evening. We're going to go to one of them, and then we have an amazing excerpt of a rally in Rochester, New York. But before we do that, we want to open up the mic of one of our usual suspects. Sister Gwen, your mic is open.
Your mic is open. Your mic is open.
Okay, we're going
to move on.
We're going to move on. We see another one of our usual suspects. So we'll hear one of our usual suspects, and then I want to play an excerpt of a protest rally in Rochester, New York.
8672, your mic is open.
Joel, your mic is open.
Is our computer out? 8672, your mic is open.
Wow. Okay, maybe people can't hear us all of a sudden?
I don't know. Let's go to the next one.
All right.
2154, your mic is open.
Can you hear us? Hello?
Ralph, I can hear you.
Okay, so I'm going to go, and thank you very much. I appreciate that. Oh, your mic, Gwen?
Yes, I'm sorry. My mic was off. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you. We thought something was wrong with
us. It wasn't with your phone. I'm sorry. Good evening. Hi, everybody. I did not know Toby, so I can't comment, and I'm sorry. She sounded like a wonderful woman, and I'm sorry to hear the passing of a great activist, as Harriet Hines was also a great activist, and I'm sure you talked about her last week or closer to the event, but it was still pretty disturbing to have to see such a young woman die. Harriet was not somebody I knew really well, but I really connected with her when I met her because we both had a passion for preservation. She was working on the African American burial ground, and she was only 49 years old. And you know, it was very disturbing to see such a young woman pass, and in such a sudden way. It sounded very much, as a matter of fact, sounded a lot like how my husband died, maybe a diabetic heart attack. Maybe the mayor getting even with her. I really don't know. And honestly, I wouldn't put anything past, you know, the government at this point. But she had a beautiful service. And I think the saddest thing was to watch her three children, her three really good, well-mannered, well-spoken little babies. Her daughter was only 8 years old. And she was dressed in little white patent leather shoes and a sweet little outfit that I know Harriet picked out. And her two sons were very kind and well-spoken. And I just felt really sad to see this little family have to go through something so tragic as the loss of this woman, this young woman. And so I just, you know, I want to also point out to everybody here that Harriet was also a really great leader that was young and left way too soon and left some really beautiful children in her her path. So prayers up for that. And I just want to say one last thing about the women that were arrested in the pipeline. I think it's I know this stuff happens all the time. I just can't get used to it. I can't get used to how psychotic the courts are and how crazy they are and how we continue to arrest the people that are trying to save us, and the people that are trying to kill us are the ones that are in power. And it just, you know, it for me in my life, it's so personal right now because I'm also going through a struggle in court where, you know, I stupidly thought that there would be some kind of justice here, but justice does not live in our courts. Psychopaths live in our courts. They have a lot of power. They make horrible decisions. They hurt a lot of people. And I hope someday that we'll be able to overturn this terrible way of doing things in America. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Gwen. It's sadness everywhere, but if we look at it as these are shining lights that we have been fortunate enough to come in contact with. And one of the things about Harriet Hines was that she brought her children with her. She was stressed physically. She was legally challenged physically, legally blind, in a wheelchair. But she was out there struggling for her community, and she brought her children with her as a part of her struggle. They passed out her literature. They were there with her to help her with her wheelchair. It was a wonderful thing to see. And the last struggle I was there with her was at the Julian Assange struggle, the demonstration for Julian Assange and Mumia Abu-Jamal at the courthouse in New York. And so we have memories of these wonderful people, but the memories will be there. Harriet Hines presente. Sister Betty.
And to commemorate her and her struggle, there will be a rally on May 19th, Malcolm X's birthday, Thursday, at 5 p.m. at the African Burial Ground in Brooklyn on the corner of Bedford Avenue and Church. Again, we will be rallying. The struggle continues. And in honor of her, we're having a special rally. We usually have our vigil on Wednesdays, but this time it will be Thursday, 5 p.m. You can start gathering at 4:30. If you can't stay for the whole thing, it's understandable. Rally, 5 p.m., the African Burial Ground in Brooklyn, 5 p.m., the corner of Bedford Avenue and Church. And the IRT goes there to Church Avenue. All right. We want to play this excerpt we got of a protest in Rochester, New York. And apparently, before this soldier for the fascists in this country chose Buffalo, he was considering Rochester. So a group of the community people gathered at the top grocery supermarket in Rochester in support and solidarity with the families who are victims of this Holocaust. I apologize if we...
There's a charge here tonight. The charge is that we, as a community, call our race. Deliberately, this individual...
Technical difficulties. We would like to continue, but one of the things I would like to say about that, we must observe everything that's happened and put it in perspective. And one of the things, like I say, technical difficulties is very difficult. One of the technical difficulties, one of the issues that we must observe.
Hate is not mental illness. That's right.
That's right. Race is
not mental illness.
He pointed his gun at someone that looked like him and said, sorry. We sat with families.
We're going to conclude with that, but one of the things I think we must observe is this young man, a year earlier, had threatened to shoot people in the school to do a terrorist act at his high school. The police knew about it. The Army of Occupation knew about it, and they referred him to a psychologist. And after that, he was able to buy a gun. And then, after having killed 10 people, he was captured unharmed. And this is why we call it the Army of Occupation. They were acting like police to their community. He was captured unharmed, as opposed to several, many young black people, unarmed, shot in the back, 10-year-olds, shot in a store, buying a pellet gun. I mean, if you don't understand that these contrasts on how the system works doesn't strike you, does not educate you, then you are mentally dead. This young man who had threatened a shooting at a school was able to buy a gun legally after having a check, checked by the system. And so we know who, when they say gun laws, I scream. Because I know who the gun laws are going to be used against. He could buy a gun, kill people, be arrested, unharmed. Compare that to those of us of color who go in to a gun shop. And one of the things I say about Texas, Florida, places like that, they don't care. They're just making money. It's in the North when you go into a gun shop that people are very upset with you if you are a person of color. And so if we just think of the contrast of the way Army of Occupation operates, the way our government operates when they're dealing with folks with skin color and folks who support certain, example, young man for Antifa against a fascist terrorist and killed him, the government hunted him down and murdered him. And this young man gets a lot different treatment. And so we must say, what is this government about? What can we look to for this government presently, past, and in the future? We must understand these realities and take action to preserve ourselves. Self-defense, and most important, self-defense for those who work for the liberation, safety, and security of others. That's us. We must understand that it is no longer feasible to turn the other cheek. Sister Betty.
I want to point out that Jericho makes a distinction between political prisoners and victims.
Political
victims. And so it is important that we recognize the difference. Not everyone is going to defend themselves on the spot, but everybody who is identified as an other in this country had better start taking this seriously. I don't intend to be mowed down like a dog in the street without some kind of response if I can do it. So this is why we support political prisoners, because they understand what is necessary. As Malcolm X said, by any means necessary. In addition to that, they are prisoners of war. And if you don't think there's a war, then you need to read very carefully this young man's manifesto. Without further ado, I again want to salute Jericho for recognizing the difference between political prisoners and political victims and doing something about that. We want to go to another speaker. We've extended the time because the list is quite long tonight, and we hope everybody will be patient and understanding. Brother Dennis, your mic is open.
Sad, sad times that we live all of our lives. We have always to guard our back, watch our backs. 100 years worth. Terrorism is an American institution, like mom's good old apple pie. It was Chuck Schumer that amazingly said on yesterday that he was amazed that young Peyton Gendron, the homegrown 18-year-old terrorist that terrorized many, many of us across the globe, came out unscathed. He also, in the same breath, Chuck Schumer, stated that why did Michael Brown in St. Louis in 2014 have to die if they did nothing to Peyton S. Gendron? That's amazing. This came out of Chuck Schumer's mouth on the Senate floor. I'm leading into this. Peyton S. Gendron, the 18-year-old homegrown white supremacist who murdered 10 Africans and injured 3 others in Buffalo, New York, as we all know, on this past Saturday, May 14, 2022, is an offshoot of terrorists that have been happening for 600 years. And now they use the terms, and is exactly the statement this killer used in his mass onslaught of Africans murdering while shopping. Critical race replacement, the new terminology, the mindset. This is no friendly terrorist that approaches us in the colonial mode of production. There is nothing but brutality, treachery, rape, and savagery. There is no intent to stop the suffrage levied on African people, people of color, Native indigenous people here in the United States and abroad. This is the parasitic relationship that we have with our oppressor
living as colonized people. We need dual and contending powers. And I heard you mention this, Sister Betty. Be prepared. Arm yourself. And the time is now. This is no more time to stand on hope and prayer, and because we, as we all see where trust, hope, and prayer has gotten us, we can't continuously beg the colonizers to stop killing us simply because for 600 years we have been doing just that and nothing has stopped them from killing us. No, we must indeterminably change our way of doing business with this blood-sucking, thieving colonizer who thrives on our very existences and deaths. This is a colonial mode of production, a most vicious cycle when you state a curse, and we must now collectively break this curse. For you, the colonizer, you will be replaced. Vanguard up! That's where we stand today. This is where the mindsets are. I was in a grocery store, and I'll make this brief. Then I have an announcement, real brief. I was in a grocery store today getting some items, milk, things of that nature. And I looked at a delivery man, a young black African man. He was looking all around because people were passing by behind him and in front of him. You could see the fear. You could see the fear. We can only imagine what this young delivery man goes through from town to town and sometimes in the sundown towns where you can't be there after dark. And depending on the landscape where you can't be there in the daytime. We must change our modus operandi. We must collectively begin to stop. And I'm saying this to all young people, and I wish young people would really listen today because we're going to pass the torch to you. Start saving your bullets. Start practicing discipline. We are in a war right now that while you devour me or I devour you, we're laughed at as some joke, some Toby, some jigaboo, an enemy that would kill us all. You know that, and we know that. We love you. This is why people like Toby Emmer, Brother Ralph Pointer, Sister Betty Davis, sacrifice our lives because we need this immediate change. The government will not do it. The government will never do it because the government is part of, matter of fact, the manufacturer of these terrorist projects that occur with you and me every day. There's nothing free. You have to take everything that you want, everything that you need. There will be no reparations. You have to seize it. Now's the time to seize the time. And I say this because we have babies. There are babies coming up that may not even see 2 weeks. There's no Similac. There's no Infamil. There's nothing. And we need to get back to mother's milk. We're passing on. We're only here for a season. We see our people, the most outstanding voices, die daily. Suffrage behind the walls daily. Then being released for not even having committed crimes. Political prisoners. And when they get released, they die in such a short time. You know, I'm up here crying because this is an atrocity, an abomination, and the lie of a God that you say to me that loves all. Where is that love unless we bring that love one to another? I'll say that. I'm going to depart. I'm grateful for all who make these calls. We all are revolutionaries. And now the torch must be passed on. And there are some young ones who are taking up the torch. But I can only wish that it was spread like a wildfire. Discipline is going to be key in our movement. And we have to take everything that we need to take. It will be nothing given to us. And I'll say this once more, colonizer, you will be replaced. Uhuru.
Uhuru, freedom. Thank you so much for that, brother.
Brother Dennis, what is your announcement?
Oh, thank you for reminding me because I got quite emotional.
It's just that we have a lot of people want you to forget it.
African Liberation Day. Yeah, African Liberation Day. Please call 510. This is going to be in St. Louis. It's going to be globally, actually. It's going to be May the 29th, 2022. Relentless 50 years of the African People's Socialist Party for 50 years. The Burning Spear newspaper for 50 years. Relentless. Chairman O'Malley Yesitella has been standing in the gap, just as so many others have, but with a real course of action, a real disciplined plan. That's what we need to move by, a disciplined, organized plan. We need to see.
So where is the event, and when is the event?
The event, May the 29th again. The number to call is 510-569-9620. That's 510-569-9620. Or you can go to African or ALDUHURU.org. That's ALDUHURU.org. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for that. On the move, the struggle continues. Sister Betty.
All right, we want to go to our next speaker and see if the mic is working at this time before we have another bout of poetry. But I want to remind people, Rising Together, Sunday, May 22nd, 11 a.m. all the way through 8 a.m. at 5C Cafe and Cultural Center, 68 Avenue C at East 5th Street. We can make a difference. Anti-imperialists can make a difference.
11 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Thank you. Brother Joel, your mic is open. And everybody, please be aware there's a lot of people who want to speak tonight. Thank you. Brother Joel.
Yes, I apologize for the glitch earlier. Suddenly, my phone all of a sudden disconnected right after being called upon. So anyway, I called back immediately, and thank you very much for calling me back. So this is a very sweet and sour mixture when we mourn people that have passed and at the same time celebrate the wonderful things that they did with their life and challenges all of us. This is what we have to think about. The significance of our life. It's like that Chinese saying that some people, the significance of their life is light as a feather, and other people, the significance of their life is the weight of the mountain range. So certainly we're talking about two people whose lives added a lot of weight to the struggle. And it reminds us that life is, of any individual is not forever. And we have to apply the discipline that the last speaker was spoken about to make sure that our lives have a significance in changing the world for the better. Because if it doesn't change for the better, it's not going to stay exactly the same. Things will get better or it could get much, much worse, and the crisis is upon us. The two tendencies are operating at the same time, and we have to weigh in and make sure that things go in the right direction. And we know that when we do, we're up against the forces that have created the political prisoners that the show is all about, in terms of its focus, and we have to be prepared to sacrifice, because when we step out, we know that the repressive forces here are gigantic and more purely repressive, as we hear different measures and proposals, like the proposal on the floor of Congress now that the Department of Homeland Security wants to have what they call, I think they've already formed it, a disinformation board in which they would monitor what's said on the Internet, and if anything is considered to be dangerous information, people could be rounded up as above the criminal laws and without its hypocritical niceties. While they lock people up, people could be rounded up as enemy combatants and terrorists and put away without even notification of next of kin and so on. This is actually being bandied about now in Congress and partly institutionalized. So it's just one of the things that's going on. And I notice also that there's a similarity between the Buffalo shooter, Peyton Gendron, and Kyle Rittenhouse, that a lot of the media is already emphasizing he was only 18 years old, and you're calling him a terrorist. Why, they're trying to generate sympathy for him as supposedly almost innocent, calling him mentally deranged in many cases. So they're trying to execute some sort of escape from serious justice, even for this actual killer with the blood still dripping from his hands and committing an act that was completely unprovoked, except by his own attitudes, which were trained by the system and its media to become a racist killer. And that's and the media is partly coming to his defense in the same way as they got off the killer in Wisconsin who killed shot two people and killed two and seriously injured a third Black Lives Matter demonstrators. So, and as Ralph said also, one of the people who was involved in some self-defense action without being given a trial or able to explain anything was gunned down by the police and the FBI in Portland, Oregon, only a few months ago. And so we see how the system is moving in a more and more openly violent and fascist direction. And it's not a time that people should think that they should just take a rest, or because we need a new generation like the one that was developing in a rebellious direction during the earlier decades, and which is largely, well, put it this way, it's not as active as it had been before, but on a lower level in many ways it's as active and has the potential to absorb and rekindle the consciousness.
On that note, Joel,
must continue.
I'm going to have to cut you off because it's we're running over. We're trying to be short. But in conclusion, you know, the congressman, the cowardly congressman in Washington who came up with the crack cocaine bill took most of them, so many of our young who had potential to be organized, who had a feeling of self-defense, who had rejected this society are put in, they have been in jail for years in the death camps. They're not political. They're victims of the political system, and we become the victims because they are no longer out here to be organized to protect the community. But we fell asleep. We said, oh, they're black. Let's elect people of color without examining or without putting pressure, without understanding the realities of this economic system. So thank you so much for that, Joel, because it is a real problem, and we must move on. Sister Betty.
If you really are upset and you are not a warrior, then support those who sacrificed everything for you. Support New York City, Jericho. Support resistance in Brooklyn. Let's bring the rest of them home. That's a message to the elite that we're not going to take it anymore. There's more than one way to say, not in my name. We want to continue. We have another one of our usual suspects. And I want to remind you that the judges are here in terms of the spirit of Mandela and our struggle to show the contradiction with regard to a country that claims it stands for democracy and human rights. And they have decided that the verdict is guilty. And how interesting that they should have their verdict validated by the incident in Buffalo. So, Brother Tom, your mic is open. But before your mic is open, there is a way to fight back. It's called Mobilizing in Our Own Name. And it's an incredible book by a worker, Clarence. And he will be speaking on Saturday from 12 to 4 at TWU Local 100, 195 Montague Street. Again, Saturday, May 21st, Thomas, a union organizer champion. And he will be discussing strategies for mobilizing in our own name, which is the name of his bestseller book. Thank you for waiting. Brother Tom, your mic is open. Can you hear us?
Thank you. The United States has provided over $4 billion in so-called security assistance to Ukraine and wants to give it another $20 million including heavy-duty weapons such as tanks. The United States manufacturers of arms. They give money to President Biden. Lyndon Johnson's war in Vietnam, at least, was opposed by many senators, such as Senators Fulbright, Wayne Morse, Robert Kennedy, George McGovern, Eugene McCarthy, Frank Church, and even the segments of the mass media questioned the Vietnam War. But today, the House of Representatives overwhelmingly supports Ukraine and the demonizing Putin and Russia for invading the Ukraine. This fascist government of the Yukon is depicted as a democratic country invaded by Russia. Even so-called domestic progressives such as Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, voted to President Biden, Nancy Pelosi went to Kiev to be pay homage to President Zelensky until the Ukraine defeats Russia. Even Bernie Sanders supports the Ukraine's joining NATO. Finland and Sweden both join NATO, and as these countries cooperated with the Nazis during World War II. The neo-Nazi regime used as an example of the mass murder of blacks in Buffalo. At least 10 blacks, were killed by a white supremacist who wore a patch worn by neo-Nazis in the Ukraine government. This was a symbol used by a mosque in which at least 50 Muslims were killed 3 years ago in New Zealand. Well, as the U.S. risks a nuclear war, Ukraine, even though the Ukraine President Zelensky claims he is Jewish, actually the Ukraine is a anti-Jewish regime. Sanctions on cheap oil and gas from Russia has created an unprecedented inflation in the United States and in Western Europe. The United States now has to buy expensive gas from Saudi Arabia from its own companies and from the Gulf states. I'm sure that you notice the increase in prices every week here in the United States. China has stated that Russia will sell cheap gas and oil to China itself, to India, Japan, and the United States sanctions on Russia will fail. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Always great information from Tom Syracuse. Very important to bring in the economic realities of this and these so-called sanctions to hurt the Russians. I went to the gas station just the other day in Brooklyn, New York, $5.60 per gallon. And nowhere, the stop is not in sight. Just one issue. And imagine if I had to drive to work every day. I would be working for the oil companies. But, Sister Betty.
I just want to say this program is about an analysis of oppression, capitalism, anti-colonialism, and imperialism. We're here to give you a foundation to hold on to when things seem hopeless. And we have all kinds of people who have expertise. The person who's going to speak next before our poet in residence takes us out, Sister Dennis, Audrey, do you want to say a few words for us? No, you're on the front lines.
Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Oh. Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, hi, good evening, everyone. I'm sorry that I'm hearing the loss of this wonderful woman who's done so much for the community to preserve the burial grounds of our ancestors. And for all that's been said before, I'm thankful and grateful, and for those lives lost up in Buffalo. Sorry about the loved ones left behind to take care of their bereaved family members. And once again, I'm here to let you know we are still letting the public be aware. We want to take control of our school communities. We want to take it away from this mayor who is doing everything to change the term as if it's going to make a difference to mayoral accountability. It's mayoral control. And so the New York City Coalition to finally end mayoral control is asking the public and letting you know that it's time to call on all New York State, New York City Council, and borough representatives to conduct a full and complete audit with open public hearings on 20 years of mayoral control before any extension is granted to Mayor Adams. This is now May, and they did not include it in the budget yet, and I'm hoping it's not going to be included for this year or forever. They have until June to do so. So we are asking for the public to go to the website at Finally End Mayoral Control. That's Finally End MC2022@gmail.com. By the way, that is the email that you can contact the organizers to let them know that you want to be a member. The website is New York City Coalition to Finally End Mayoral Control. You'll see a form there where you can sign up to be a member. And I want to say that today there was a union called New York State NYSUT. Andy Pallotta is the president. And today was a day he was asking for members out in Long Island and upstate to vote for school board matters. That's what that union is doing. That is a parent union to the UFT. The UFT is not asking for community control. It's not asking for ending mayoral control. They're silent on this. But yet we see where other people besides this community, where we have 32 school districts in all these boroughs, that they're not calling to end mayoral control when this mayor is not doing anything to call the stakeholders at the table. He unilaterally want to just take control, and we don't want that. So we're asking you to go to the website and sign up to be a member. And I'm sorry I didn't introduce myself, Audrey Dennis, mayor. I'm with the New York City Coalition as a member, Student Improvement Organization, and I'm also a member of the Universal Negro Improvement Association founded by Marcus Garvey. And I thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph. Thanks again.
Well, thank you so much. We learn, as I say, when we tune in the program, I'm happy that I'm learning as well as speaking on things that I know. And as Tom Syracuse pointed out, the so-called, and I use the term of Elijah Muhammad made popular, the so-called progressive representatives we have, do they not see the contradiction of the way the Ukrainian immigrants are treated as compared to the immigrants coming in here from the Americas? The immigrants that America has created by stealing their resources and buying and controlling their governments so that they cannot have a decent life in their country, they have to come here to get the resources from their countries because they were brought here. As one man said to me years ago when he was asked, why are you here? He was from Honduras. He says, I come here because you have come to my country and taken everything from there and brought it here, and all I want to do is be able to buy a bicycle for my children. Not a lot, but you have destroyed my country, and I must come here. And where are the progressives forcing the government for millions and trillions for immigrants at our southern border? They're sending them back home. And so I hardly call them progressives, but whenever they have an event, I am there to call them out. But I will, this is where it a very emotional moment here, and so I'll ask Sister Betty to continue here.
I want to thank you, Sister Dennis. Please continue to call in and keep us updated and give people marching orders. Everybody's saying, where's the youth? Well, have you ever heard of cats educating mice? Cats do not educate mice. They eat them. Even if you don't have a child in school, if you pay taxes, you show up at the local public school where you are. You volunteer. You be the eyes of the community. I once saw an anti-fascist film on the revolution in South America. How the people were always watching the fascists. Everything they did, they were there to watch them. If you can't do anything, be there to spy on them, to help protect our children. Volunteer in the public school system. Take back your school.
And remember, the school, as well as an education institution, is an economic industry that must be controlled by the community it pretends to serve.
Okay, I want to make the last announcement again. Clarence Thomas, Saturday, May 21st, 12 to 4 p.m., he will be discussing mobilizing in our own name. It's a Bible on how we can organize together and push back at 195 Montague Street, 9th floor in Brooklyn, 22nd Sunday of May. Come back and rise together with people of like minds who agree with you that something must be done, and it must be done by us if it's going to be done right. So, Sister Nzinga, thank you for being here. We need you. Your mic is open.
Yes, good evening. I don't have a poem tonight, though, but I do. It's because it's too long. I don't want to take up a lot of time. And listening to the program, so many things were said. The first thing that comes to my mind is, how long must we tolerate this? How long? That racist, evil, full of hate, terrorist killed 10 African people up in Buffalo. And what did they do? They took his ass straight to the hospital in a hospital gown and put him in front of the court and showed it all on social media to sensitize people. But when Frank James shot people, no one was murdered. They took him straight to jail. He did not pass go. He did not collect anything. He went directly to jail. He was also said to be mentally ill. That terrorist is not mentally ill. He's sick. He's full of hate, and he hates African people, and he was homegrown, as I heard Dennis say. I also wanted to say real quick, baby formula, really, you don't have any? Are people that messed up in the head, God, they don't need the baby formula on the shelf. They make their own nutritious food to nurture their child. We don't need their baby formula. So, and the other thing I wanted to say, thank you, Betty Davis and Brother Vouch. We watched on TV what they did to those Haitian immigrants when they were at the border on horseback, beating them, making sure they went back across the border. And what do they do to the freaking Ukraine? They finance them. Eric Adams is talking about giving an additional $2 million to the refugees that come here. to help them with their legal and their immigration fees, to help them. What do we have to do? What the hell? What? How long is this going to go on? It has to stop. They only understand dollars. We got to stop spending our money with them. We have to unite, stop spending our money with them. That's all they understand. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that. And with that, we're going to play another rendition of I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. And I say good night, much love to all of our brothers and sisters and brothers on this program.
See you at the African Braves Matter demo Thursday, 5 p.m., Church Avenue and Bedford Avenue in Brooklyn. And don't forget, Rising Together on the 21st, 11 to 8. Thank you. And thank you to all of you who got on tonight.
Still burning me. Wish I could say all the things that I can see when I'm relaxed. I'd be starting anew. I wish I could be like a bird in the sky. Don't leave me. How sweet it would be. Finally.